Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour on this August the 4th, 2009, on the West Coast, August the 5th now, on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone of the United States, as well as everywhere else across the Atlantic Ocean and the east of the Atlantic Ocean, all the way over to the Pacific. We would also like to welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on blogtalkradio.com, whether that be live or in a program archived later in the day. It's very nice to have you with us. And I guess I should say not just ladies and gentlemen, but young men and young ladies as well, because during the daytime, of course, the kids get to listen to the show on the way to school or on their morning drive with their folks. That said, I want to announce that I've got posted on my website, directlightproductions.com, in the article section and on the news page. So if you happen to trip on one or the other, you can find an article that I wrote today. It's been in the making for a few days, and we're going to talk about that with tonight's guest. The name of the article is Dr. Orley Tate's Federal Lawsuits Exposed to the Flu Pandemic. And I think you'll find it an interesting article. We are going to talk about it, but I do urge you to read it for the documentation that's enclosed therein. With that, I would like to invite back to Evident Footprints my good friend, my publisher and editor at the Idaho Observer, along with his wife, Ingrid Castle, Mr. Don Harkins. Don, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Well, good evening, Don. And yes, you know, we are still actually celebrating the birth of our auspicious leader, the alleged birth of our alleged leader. We still have 2 hours of celebrating yet to do, or actually an hour and 57 minutes worth of celebrating left to do.
Yeah. Well, that's if we have the year right. Isn't that right?
Well, that's we have to, as your investigations have shown over the last year plus, and I've got to give you a lot of credit for all of the digging that's been going on here. I'm, as you mentioned, your editor, I suppose, and I've also been your fact checker, and there have been, say, along the line a couple of different times when we maybe have disagreed somewhat over the interpretation of some pieces of data. But as I review the pieces that you pick up and check facts, you do seem to be pretty well spot on the whole time. And so the only way that one can actually describe this person, and that even, I think, to a degree remains in question, is to use a lot of alleged in your description of him, his life, what he's doing here, and where he's taking us.
Yes, yes. And it's unfortunate because we could be spending our time creating works of art, you know, literature, per se, and instead we've been reduced to reporting crime, reporting on lies and the false history that's been written. And I guess that's got some value to it anyway, but you get my meaning. I'm sure you would probably.
Well, yes, in fact, I've grown up in the Northwest United States. I was born in Boise, Idaho, but lived there only a small amount of time and grew up my young years in the Seattle area and then over to Eastern Washington in the Spokane area, and now I'm in Northern Idaho. So I've been in the Northwest my whole life, and when I was a kid, I was very, very passionate about Indians all over the country, but I love the Indians, I love the culture, I love just everything about that. And I was a little kid at the time, and I remember also spending quite a bit of time on the Washington coast and just marveling at the the longhouses that they made, and the totem poles, and the magnificent canoes, and the tremendous artwork, and that was the life that they led. They had food aplenty. There wasn't a lot of competition because there was an abundance of food, and the climate was temperate, if not really wet. But there was a lot of time for people to have families, engage in storytelling, and produce artwork. And there is an aspect of me that really wishes that we had a lifestyle and a culture that it would slow down, be a little bit more honorable, and have time to cook and eat and create art and be close with our families and have good relations with our neighbors. But unfortunately, we are in this culture at this time, and our passions and our decency and our hopes for the future are very, very much in demand at this time. So while I wish we weren't having to do this, it is an honor actually to be in this capacity.
Yes, of course, or we wouldn't have chosen that path. And I think there is a greater force, some call it God, that is compelling us to do this work. Would you agree with that?
Either that or insanity.
Okay, well, let's take insanity. Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I find myself having to make more jokes in my life now than I ever have before, just because of the seriousness of it all. But, no, you're right. There is an architect of the universe. I'm not really capable of ascribing a Christian God, a Muslim God, a this God or a that God to what is happening, but I do feel a creative force. And I also can see in my life as well as others that if we get up in the morning and we choose what we're going to do and we're going down a certain path, then the universe rewards what we're doing. And if we make incorrect choices, we come up upon obstructions and bumps along the way, which is an interesting dichotomy, I think, because I feel very motivated, very divinely inspired, say, with the path that I've chosen for my life. But then you look at the people who we are viewing as our adversary here on planet Earth, and it appears that no matter how vile and abusive and exploitive and ruthless they are, they seem to be rewarded in their paths as well. So I'm having trouble puzzling through that one, but I know that isn't for me. This is the route that I need to be taking.
Yeah. Well, getting a little bit to the point of today's news, and I think I don't even know what the mainstream is talking about today. I could imagine that they're showing birthday parties at the White House or some garbage like that. And of course, it makes people feel good, and it accomplishes a bit more brainwashing when that occurs. But in light of your particular following my research and where it's led us, and it causes us to look at other aspects of this whole huge puzzle, you and I agreed that we would visit a particular aspect of this whole thing that's really not getting any attention other than comedic jabs on mainstream media. And I'm speaking about Dr. Orly Tate's lawsuits. Now, any of us that would take on something like the U.S. government or a cabal that's a communist cabal that's staged a coup on the American people and their Republican constitutional government, It's worth looking at this case and why it's dragging along, why nothing is being acknowledged on any level. Yes, we argue, we dispute over whether or not this case is going to be heard, whether it's going to be dismissed, but we've come to a mutual, and I'm saying you and I, and probably a lot of others out there now, a mutual agreement that this is a Hegelian argument that's taking place over Hawaii and Kenya, and it's a distraction, it's a misdirection, and it was with the intention of finding out more about that I really discovered a landmine or a bombshell that didn't go off and is about to go off. And what was your first reaction when you got the news that Dr. Tate's husband was working privately with in conjunction with Novartis and likely the bird flu vaccine?
Well, as you know, and quite possibly also many of your listeners know, because I talked about it the last time I was on the show, as indeed my wife, Ingrid Castle, talked about it also, and we are very, very involved in our attempts to avert what I see as the largest public health disaster that is coming down on us like a freight train at this time, and I'm referring to the, quote, swine flu pandemic, and the global pandemic preparedness machinery is ramping up at this time to create billions, and I said that with a B on purpose, an estimated maybe 4.9 to 5 billion vaccines to bop every man, woman, and child they can tackle and jab a needle into to avert this swine flu, which is a rather benign illness in people who are relatively healthy, and is only really lethal in people who have other underlying complications. And so we see this thing coming down the pike, and we see that pregnant women and children are supposedly going to be first, and that the schools of this nation are going to be turned into shot clinics sometime between mid-September and mid-October, according to the HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius and others. And we're in the middle of this, and we see GlaxoSmithKline, Novartis, we see Baxter, MedImmune, other huge multinational pharmaceutical conglomerates who are participating in this thing. And then I talk to you. We're all very, very aware of the things that are going on with the Obama birth certificate issue. We know, we've sensed for over about a year now that BHO, a.k.a. BHO et al., the alleged president of the United States, who is allegedly, it's his birthday today, and we see that this story of his parents, Stanley Ann Dunham, the white gal, the black man from Kenya, Barack Obama Sr., is just some kind of a strange red herring fallback story, and we never could quite figure out what that really meant or where that was going. We kind of theorized that maybe it was some kind of a setup to create a race war in this country, or, you know, we just weren't quite clear. And then when you came up with this little piece of info, it just seemed like a couple of more little dots got connected here.
Yeah. I'm getting IMs from some of the listeners, and I'm getting statements that are heard on the alternative radio and mainstream radio today, and I'm going to quote a couple of things here. The people have had enough. We're going to get radical and continue to get radical, and you will hear our wrath. We're also getting a message that, Seth, you may pay attention to this, too. We're hearing that some of our East Coast connections are not working. I don't know that. I wouldn't hear that from those that aren't hearing, but maybe they're trying not to spoil the birthday party tonight. Who knows?
I suppose that's a possibility. there was an interesting... Yeah, go ahead. I was going to go off on a different tangent that I probably shouldn't, so never mind what I was about to say.
Well, these messages are flying through at 100 miles an hour, so I just thought I'd interject that there so we can talk for a second. The issue of this dialectic, this argument over Hawaii and Kenya is pretty much been dispelled in my work. And I've urged people to send out the links to people. I've urged people to go to my website, and I'll continue to do that. Your paper is instrumental in getting it into the hands of thousands and thousands of people, and it gets passed around and copied and that. And so there are a lot of people waking up. This show is being heard around the world tonight, and a lot of people in the military who will be the first approached on this issue of the the vaccinations, if they haven't already, what was I going to say? Well, the military is paying attention to what's being said, and the word is growing. This body of support that we have from our military is mushrooming almost overnight. And
under the present circumstances, the military really should be listening, because the much vaunted 1918-1919 quote Spanish flu began, well, one of the origins was Fort Riley, Kansas, when a bunch of soldiers getting towards the end of the war were vaccinated with a paratyphus vaccine and also several other vaccines, and then stuck in the hold of a ship and sent to Spain, where they had a miserable journey, and when they got well enough were deployed all over Europe. The same thing, and then they came back, and with the extra vaccine that was left, the American people were told that all these soldiers are coming back with illnesses and they better get protected, and so they gave them this typhus vaccine, an experimental vaccine, and those are some of the conditions upon which the 1918 Spanish flu that killed an estimated somewhere between 20 and 500 billion people, you know, depends on the estimate, but I think most people would settle on the number of about 20 million people died of an influenza-like illness during that time, but there was a lot of improper care and other factors involved, you know, the stresses of war and bad diets and bad drugs, so to speak. And also the 1976 swine flu fiasco began when a soldier at Fort Dix died of some strange illness, and even though the illness itself never materialized into something lethal in anybody other than that one soldier, it prompted the Ford administration, with the urging of then Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, to ramp up a massive vaccination effort across the country that ended up as an absolute disaster. Some 53 people died, hundreds were paralyzed for life, and thousands ended up with Guillain-Barré syndrome. And after their aggressive attempt to vaccinate 220 million people in this country was preempted at about 47 million because of all the adverse reactions, we had a country of people that were set up for chronic illness in a big way. So the military should be paying attention, because two major pandemics have their origins with the administration of vaccines to military personnel, because that's what we believe actually happened in 1976. The soldier didn't just come up with a weird bug. It was injected into him.
Yeah. And now this new one that we're facing today is said to be, now do we really know? Based on, let me stop for a moment and remind me to come back into this, because I want to talk about what's been developed today and all these different incidents of letting this information out. You wonder who is on whose side anymore. If I look at the Dr. Tate's lawsuit, and then I look at what kind of work her husband is doing and his association with Novartis, and what this software does, that, I mean, 2D and 3D modeling structures, reactions, and mixtures is about making vaccines. Novartis isn't making, you know, chemical fertilizers and stuff like that, as far as I know. So you're talking about these vaccines, particularly the one that Novartis has patented. Now, in light of this revelation and all of this information that's sort of creeping out little by little, you really don't know who's doing the honorable thing here, who's fighting for our freedom, or who's fighting for the truth to come out. It's as though these things are put out there as diversions, so that we don't notice the things that are happening, while the media joins in the fear mongering and the spin and the propaganda and the mind control. They assume that all of this stuff is just going to go away, that things will become so insane regarding this flu pandemic that people will no longer care to pay attention if Barack Obama is from Uranus, or should I say Uranus? Some people say it that way.
You can have more fun with Uranus.
Yeah, well, you can. Anyway, let's not take it too far beyond.
That's right. We're serious journalists here.
Well, we've got kids listening too. So the point I'm making now is, with all of this going on, and this is quite important. People should really be distressed about this, because there are these rumors that they dug up the DNA from frozen tundra type people who were buried in Alaska, having come down with this swine flu back in 1918. It really doesn't matter at this point, I think, based on the technology they have and the number of labs I've tripped over in my general genealogical research, who are doing this kind of work in places like England, for example, bio weapons labs, and they're doing nanotechnology, and they're developing technology to control our behavior with computers, with probably these injections or vaccinations, if you want to call them that, and virtually every possible avenue that they can to mind control us. These things are being experimented upon and financed by somebody. Who do you think is behind the financing of this, and how does all of this come together?
Well, you know, it does appear that at some point in time, maybe you can call the line of demarcation 1918. You could also probably go all the way back, really, to 1796, when Edward Jenner, the father of modern vaccinology, vaccinated a little boy named Phipps. I can't quite remember his first name. James Phipps, thank you. And started the whole smallpox propaganda machine, as rubbing cow pus into an open wound is what is going to confer immunity from smallpox. And it was a fraud then, it's been a fraud ever since. So let's go ahead and start with that as the moment in which a certain echelon of people globally had decided that they were going to take the war on man inside his body. I believe the exterior wars that have been fought, the bombs and the nukes and the guns and all the high-tech weapons and the planes and the submarines and the aircraft carriers, all of that is just really to take a bunch of productivity of man and blow it up, just to continually correcting, you know, so we keep making stuff and blowing stuff up, making stuff and blowing stuff up, because that's, I think, how our silly economy gets maintained. But the real war has been waged inside of our bodies for the last couple hundred years, and that high-tech manner in which warfare is being waged is really gaining some ground between the nanotech, between the chemtrails that we know exist, and the massive amounts of toxins and nanotechnologies, and the resultant Morgellons diseases, and all of these things are literally changing us. We are less, quote, human now than we were a couple hundred years ago, and we are filled with synthetics. We're filled with plastics. We're filled with polymers and chemicals and all sorts of things that were not here when God created us. And it is changing us. It's changing our diets. It's changing our habits. It's changing our thought patterns. It's changing how we view the world around us. We are continually seeking something better than creation as a way to make a paradise for ourselves on Earth. And that has led us completely down the wrong road, and we are really beginning to reap the whirlwinds of that. And the driving force in modern times, and let's go ahead and set a new starting point, and that would be the age of modern medicine opening up, and that has now and has always been managed by the Rockefeller family.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that the name that keeps coming up in my research? I mean, I keep stumbling upon these dots that get connected, and it's always spelling out the name Rockefeller, isn't it?
You know, it really is. It really did. And literally, Dr. A. Truat did a video presentation or a DVD presentation about 3 years ago. I believe it's 2006, called The Trial of the Century, in which he goes back through the development of modern medicine, which literally came from snake oil salesmen, and it was the Rockefeller family. And they figured out how to hoodwink people into believing that chemical medicaments are the answer to man's ails. And look at where we've gone since then, and look at the huge pharmaceutical industry, the hospitals all over the place. One would think that if this model of medicine were actually successful, year by year there'd be fewer and fewer sick people, but instead, year by year, the numbers of sick people and the illnesses with which they are sickened by just are multiplying exponentially to the point we're at now where people are just flat ill. I mean, almost everybody that I know does not feel up to par, and that doesn't matter whether they're triathletes or pathological beer drinkers. It's the same thing. We all have these ailments, and we're all carrying these pathogens and toxins and environmental poisons, and it's really because we adopted this model of health and wellness, and also, of course, the food chain, which has been horribly polluted by biotech and genetic modification, and that also is a Rockefeller-originated concept.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm getting tons of IMs here, so this doesn't happen a lot on my show. This is really connecting with people, so I want to let you know what one of our listeners is telling us. In the military, okay, as I'm assuming this is as a result of the vaccines that are being administered to the military, one Marine dead, one Army soldier paralyzed, and a number of people in the military are sick, with one Navy vessel quarantined in the Pacific Ocean. 247 Marines have been vaccinated, and they're being sent to Afghanistan. Now, I guess that means before being sent to Afghanistan. All returned home when one Marine came down with a severe illness, likely the flu, and later died. Those Marines have not been given orders to Afghanistan. They're still in stagging mode, and prepared to go. So this is happening as we speak, and it's not a laughing matter. I'm chuckling just to hide my true feelings about this. Yes, this is horrible. And we've been talking about it, and now we're getting reports that this is going on. This is pretty specific information, and it's not coming through the mainstream media. I can guarantee you that. And we haven't been given one name out of all the people they say have died in the general populace around the world. We've not heard one name. So do we really know that this is happening, or is this just being hyped up gradually to produce this psychological fear?
Well, that's a really interesting comment. Not too long ago, the World Health Organization and the CDC, just moments later, announced that they had reached the 100,000 mark of swine flu cases reported, and so they were no longer going to be counting the individual cases. In, I believe it was April, I'm not completely certain of that, but a couple months back, the CDC announced that they were expanding the number, or the definition of H1N1, quote, swine flu infection, to include people who were healthy, but got ill and were testing positive for an A-type influenza, but negative for H1N5. They were going to be included. people who are hospitalized for influenza-like illnesses, which is anything where you barf or cough or blow snot. It could be food poisoning. It could be chemical poisoning. That's an ILI. They would be included as well. Anybody who has been traveling could be classified and got sick could be classified as an H1N1. And anybody who could be linked epidemiologically to somebody else who was classified as having H1N1 could also be in this category. So they have tremendously padded the numbers and expanded the definition of what qualifies for the purpose of boosting the numbers and boosting the hysteria, as you indicated.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the $64,000 question as I was listening to you. Are they going to vaccinate the people who are sick of the lies?
Well, yeah, and again, we're chuckling out of nervousness and horror, I think, but I don't know exactly how it's going to play out. However, the World Health Organization came out with a priority of who should get the vaccine first, because another aspect of this hype, not unlike almost every other year when they're trying to hype the flu vaccine uptake by stating that there's some kind of a shortage, and they tell people, you know, just to back off if you're not a high-risk group, just to wait, let other people get theirs. And, of course, selfish Americans use that as an incentive to go flock to get theirs. And it's sad and it's pathetic, and I wish people would not behave in this predictable manner, because it's making a mockery out of the dignity of the common man. But the World Health Organization suggested, and this could vary by region, that first responders and health personnel should get it first, children second, pregnant women, people with chronic underlying conditions such as asthma and what they refer to as morbid obesity. Now, these are the people who are dying from the illness, but they're really dying from the vaccine. By the way, that was established by a physician in Mexico who watched his whole staff get sick and some of them die after taking the vaccine. And so then that was back in April that disclosure was made. Of course, not picked up in the mainstream media. And in the United States, though, since the beginning of June, HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius has stated that her priority is to get schools and faculty and staff ready to turn, just in case it happens, schools into shot clinics this year. And their priority is to get all the children and pregnant women first. Now, children should not be receiving the flu vaccine anyway, because they all contain thimerosal, which is a mercury-based derivative that, even though the World Health Organization and the CDC says does not harm neurological development, they've removed some of this thimerosal from some vaccines as a precaution only, but everybody with half a brain knows that mercury is toxic, and injecting it right into your lymphatic system where it has access to your internal organs, including your brain, is going to be disruptive of neurological development. It's not exactly brain surgery. It's logic. It's common sense. So even though the officials say that there's no problem, we know that there is. And it's also responsible for the large epidemic of autism in America today, which is affecting, according to Department of Education records and the number of kids requiring special education these days, about 1 in 67 American children are being diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. And that's phenomenal, Don. 1 in 67 of American children are now neurological cripples for the rest of their life because of this. And now we're going to vaccinate all of them for a flu bug that might not even exactly exist. And even if it does, if you treat it well and with naturopathically and with common sense and bed rest and fresh air and good food and plenty of liquids, it would be mild. And then we're going to bop all the pregnant women in this country when pregnant women are told to stay away from fish because of mercury content. We're going to inject mercury right into their body so it has access to their developing fetus. And I it's really hard for me to not develop a bit of a militant tone when I'm talking about this, because the insanity of it, the genocidal potential of these policies is unprecedented, and it is coming right down the tracks, barreling right at us like a fully loaded freight train.
Yes. Well, Don, Evident Footprints is the venue for bringing out the truth. And if you feel like getting into a rant, be my guest, okay? Sincerely.
I appreciate that. And there is another component to this. And for all the military personnel who are listening out there, pay very close attention. There is a book that was published in 2004 by an investigative journalist named Gary Matsumoto, and the book is called Vaccine A. Vaccine A, the covert government experiment that's killing our soldiers and why GIs are only the first victims. What he is talking about here is a substance that in vaccinology is called an adjuvant. Mercury is a preservative. It is the stuff that this massively unsterile, uncontrollably replicating filth requires mercury to stabilize it. Otherwise, it would continue replicating out of control, and if they fired one of these vaccines into somebody, they'd just drop dead on the spot. So these vaccines are so toxic by themselves that, believe it or not, unless there was mercury in them, they would be more lethal than they already are. Mercury is one of the most lethal substances on the planet, most toxic substances on the planet, and yet vaccines are made safer by the presence of mercury. Now let your mind twist on that for a moment. And now we have this other class of substances that's put into vaccines called adjuvants. Adjuvants are substances that excite the body's immune response so that the other material in the vaccine can go to work, the theory being to provide you some sort of protection against the illness. And the adjuvant that we're finding out may have also been used in 1918, but is going to be in the flu vaccine, is as a variation of squalene. They call MP59 or MPL59. This is an oil and water adjuvant. These are various oils mixed with water, and they mimic closely enough our own amino acids, our own essential body fats, and essentially encourages the body, tricks the body into attacking itself for life. This material is in there, and every single lab animal that has had this stuff injected into their bodies dies an early death and dies with crippling arthritis and other autoimmune problems. So we know from the contracts that have been let to several of the vaccine manufacturers, and Baxter Pharmaceutical being the lead one, is providing adjuvant for these vaccines to the tune, I believe, the most recent figure now after two or three different rounds of contractual fulfillments is almost $800 million. So there's $800 million worth of this adjuvant of known lethality that is going into these vaccines. Also, this is the stuff you may remember from Gulf War illness times, the term squalene used quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Squalene is one of these oil and water adjuvants, and squalene, most mammals, many animals produce squalene. Sharks happen to produce a lot because their digestive system is rather weird, and about a third of the internal organ mass of a shark is liver, so they produce quite a bit of squalene, and it ends up actually being their food that they actually run on as fuel. And so they harvest this stuff, they inject it into our bodies, it tricks our bodies into attacking itself, and we die early and with crippling arthritic conditions, among other possibilities. The insanity of this is legendary. And just recently, it was the 30th of July, Diane Miller, one of our vaccine activists in the Midwest, marvelous woman, was on, I believe it was MSNBC, and had a five-minute spot with Anthony Fauci, who is the National Institutes of Health, a pro-vaccinator guru guy that finds no relationship whatsoever between mercury and autism and other neurodevelopmental illnesses in children, was her adversary on this show. And he spoke about how completely safe vaccines are and the flu vaccine and it's how effective it is. And all that stuff is nonsense. The real stats prove that. But Diane, who, bless her heart, was very nervous about the whole thing, she got on there and she managed to get out her concerns about the new vaccine coming out and the adjuvants they are going to use. And Fauci was rather surprised by that, and he denied that these adjuvants were going to be used, even though we have CDC contracts showing that these adjuvants have been bought and paid for, and they are going into the vaccine.
And so they're likely described in the Novartis patents as well, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I can't say that specifically, although the work on this vaccine began. They're saying that it's under development now, and they're in production now, and that's complete nonsense. In 1997, it was globally announced that Jeffrey Taubenberger at Fort Detrick, Maryland, had found this victim of the 1918 Spanish flu buried in Alaska ice. They grabbed a specimen of the what they thought was the extinct 1918 virus, and by 2005, again, it was globally announced that he had sequenced the genome for replication, and it was at that time, in 2005, that they began developing a vaccine in case terrorists would want to unleash this bioweapon on the world. I mean, I don't know why people can't logically figure out the cause and effect there, but nevertheless, I guess the hype is disguising it. And so this vaccine has been under development since that time, and I believe it was in February 18th to 20th, somewhere in there, that Novartis took out a patent on the vaccine. And I'm still a little hazy on exactly what aspect of the vaccine is patented, what novel process is being employed, but for sure they did take out a patent on it, and it's public record, and I have it in my stuff, but I just haven't analyzed it thoroughly enough to comment on it intelligently.
Yeah. Now, I'd just like to make a comment before I go into any other questions.
Yeah, sorry about that. I went on another rant.
No, that's fine. That's excellent information, you know, and it's important that comes out right now. Here we are. First of all, this is my commentary. We're in a society where since the mid-1980s, it was becoming common knowledge among dentists around the country, around the world, really, that it was unsafe to harbor mercury fillings in your mouth. And that's a practice that I presume began in the late 1940s, if not sooner. And now they're going to inject it directly into one's bloodstream. Then you have the normal influenza A, the human version of the flu. And when someone comes down with that, they may be laid out for a week or two at most, and then they recuperate. In extreme cases, the elderly have died, but this has occurred throughout the years. The most that die, the average, I understand, is 36,000 people across the whole planet in 1 year. Now, you're looking at 6.2 billion potential deaths. And I don't know what plan they have to secure, to keep alive 500 million people to be their reduced slave populace after all of this is over. I mean, you know, this is just absolute insanity. It's beyond Satanism. and yet, we're just supposed to take this like this is no big deal, like they're protecting us. You mentioned mercury as a preservative. We have a preservative used commonly in Chinese food, monosodium glutamate. that's known to be toxic. And yet these things are allowed to occur. So the very hypocrites that pretend they want to save us or protect our health are only interested in profiting off of our demise. It's as simple as that. And I submit that we should rename influenza A, or this new virus, in influenza BS. Your thoughts on that?
Well, and it's true. Okay, first of all, remember just a few moments ago when I was saying how the CDC had expanded the definition of somebody who could qualify as being clinically diagnosed as having H1N1 or swine flu. Well, the same thing goes for the regular flu every year. Now, this flu number, for the last decade, every year they come out with this number of 36,000. Included in the people who die from the, quote, influenza every year, this 36,000 number, which remains static year after year, so apparently the flu vaccine isn't working, are people who have ILIs, influenza-like illnesses. Now, influenza-like illnesses, when you get the flu, what do? You have a fever, you barf, you cough, you produce a lot of mucus, you feel achy and filled with pains and stuff. The symptoms of an influenza, quote, bug is no different than mercury poisoning or some food poisonings or getting a whole snoot full of pesticides or herbicides. So whether an influenza bug, and I always use that in quote marks in my mind, because the real issue here isn't a bug. The severity of symptoms is always contingent upon the relative health of the host. So bugs are around us all the time. The only time they affect us symptomatically is when there is dead stuff that needs to be turned to soil in our bodies. It's kind of kind of a crude way to say it.
Yeah, but it's true. Yeah.
But that's ultimately the way it is. And so this illness is no different than every other illness on the planet in that it for any microorganism, anything in God's creation to replicate requires the correct terrain. If you have a clean body of living tissue, then the ability for these things to replicate is minimized because the environment is alkaline rather than acidic. Everything is functioning. All the cells are taking on nutrients. They're excreting waste. They're respirating. There's no opportunity for infection. And so the only reason people get sick and die from illness is because their bodies are suitable hosts. And then the problem can be compounded dramatically because of Western medical science, which treats symptoms by suppressing them rather than allowing the toxic material that is being loosed in your body out. And so this is BS. The fact that with every illness that comes down the pike, a vaccine has to be developed for it is the height of medical illogic, and people keep buying it because it's mysterious. And there's another component to this that is very frustrating to me, and that is that people are just responsibility-absolving machines. If there is any possible way they can abuse themselves, abuse their bodies, create the opportunity for infections, and then turn their life over to an expert to give them a pill or a magic bullet, they're into it. And even if it means their own death, even if it means neurologically crippling their children, they do it in droves. And that's the damnable aspect of this thing, is that right now in America, 80% are sitting there watching TV, and they've got one hand on a sleeve ready to roll it up when they're being told by some talking head to do so. And that's a real big shame, and it is such an insult to the intelligence and dignity of the common man. And I really, really wish that people could pay attention and break out of the box that has been created for them and look at things realistically and take control of their own lives.
Yes, I agree. Now, I recall a show that you and I Actually, Ingrid and Dr. Andrew Ott did right before the Olympics in 2008. The Olympics opened on August 8th. I think it may have been the 5th or the 6th of August. Do you recall that show
we
did?
No, it was 8808. Oh, you mean the show that we did? Sure. It was just a day or two before then.
Yes, okay. And Dr. Ott brought out the fact that he had pretty compelling evidence that they may try to initiate these vaccines back then, almost
right.
as a means of getting a ticket out of China. Without the vaccine, you weren't going to leave China. But that may have been just a supposition on the data that he had collected. But yesterday, when I discovered this link to Dr. Orly Tates through her husband, and this link to Novartis and all that, I found it on a Chinese website, which was rather interesting. And that's the article that's included within the piece that I wrote, divulging this information. And I want to read something to you because this really describes the technology that's going to be used to create these types of vaccinations. And this is referring, I'm gonna jump in the middle of this. Descartes is the system tools that are used to run this whole program that interfaces with the Oracle 8i server system. And I quote, "Today, Descartes delivers an extensive range of chemical information capabilities such as fast direct storage and retrieval of 2D and 3D structures, reactions, and mixtures. Operations provided include high-performance searching of full structure, substructure, superstructure, similarity, and other structural operations. Our utilization of unique SMILES and its indexing delivers unparalleled speed and flexibility in storing, novelty checking, and searching operations," stated Joseph Tites, Chief Executive Officer of Daylight. "Utilizing the Descartes technology today, we deliver a corporate compound registration system handling archival, searching, and retrieval of over 9 million compounds with lightning speed." This is what we're facing here. This technology is being ramped up that they could basically push a button and call up a whole formula for a poison or a mind control substance or whatever their devious little minds can conceive of. And this is no small issue here. This certainly points directly to what is going on right now, that all of these independent pharmaceutical companies can be manufacturing this vaccination and have the means through which to do this. And this document I was reading from brags about thousands of scientists involved in over 250 corporations that use this technology. What are your thoughts on this, Don?
Well, getting back to one of the comments about the pandemic that we thought could be kicked off at the Olympics last year that didn't happen. We can go back to the smallpox threat in 2005, the anthrax threat in 2002, and SARS, and almost every year there's another flu thing. There was an avian flu, a couple of different avian flu threats, I think one in 1998 and, one more recently. And so every one of these, the governments of the world whoop it up, and everybody gets prepared and ready, and then nothing happens. And I am getting the feeling that these are all false starts on purpose, and I'm seeing the results of that now is a general ambivalence. I can go ahead and say the freight train is coming. They're going to mass vaccinate everybody. They're going to turn the schools into shot clinics. Kids are going to take this horrible gook home and spread it all over the country to families and everybody else. And people say, well, Don, you said that last year at the Olympics and nothing ever happened. Or you said that a couple years back with the avian flu. And they're right. For one, it's impossible for a decent man to second guess a criminally diabolical mind. So we're always operating at a disadvantage there. But but we can see how all of these false starts have inured people into thinking that it's just another one. They're not going to vaccinate me. Nobody can force me. It's going to all blow over and everything is going to be fine. And I just don't believe that this time. I'm pretty convinced. I see the warning signs everywhere. And I see also this Barack Obama story, because let's face it, if he is who we believe he is, which would be the son of, or at least the genetic line of Barack Obama, and God knows whatever other DNA from the
paternal line. Oh, you mean Barry Rockefeller.
Line.
I think you meant to say Barry Rockefeller. You said Barack Obama.
Okay, well, no, I'm talking about Barack Obama.
Yeah.
But whoever he asked, excuse me, Barry Obama, yeah, right, sorry. Okay, a.k.a. B.H.O. et al.?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that guy. If he is who he says he is, or no, excuse me, if he is who we believe he is, then he was a made man long before he was born, and the powers that are involved in the creation of this fellow could have created any baby they wanted. They could have given him any backstory they wanted, any documentation necessary, and it could have been absolutely bulletproof and unassailable, and we would have known a thing. But the fact that there is a discrepancy with his birth in Hawaii, the fact that there's discrepancies with his birth in Kenya, all of this stuff is intentional, and I see it as over the next couple of weeks, because of the Orly Tate's alleged birth certificate from Kenya, it's going to blow up into a major, major distraction and diversion. People are going to be all giddy about this particular soap opera, and they're going to all be shadowboxing with one and over stuff that isn't true, and it's cover for the main event. And it's ironic that the husband of Orly Tate's is right in the middle of this distraction on his end.
Yes. Now, in light of what you just said, you know, I can feel for Barack Obama's dilemma over the Hawaii issue and the Kenya issue. I was born in Ohio, and I would have that same issue. There would be a dilemma about my being from Hawaii or from being from Kenya or Indonesia, for that matter. Because I'm from Ohio, okay? He can't make that declaration, can he, without ruining this coup that's occurred in Washington, D.C.?
Right. Well, he can't make that declaration because the backstory created for him wasn't created to exist. Like I said, he should have, if it was intended for him to move into the presidency and be accepted as the president in every single way, it would have been easier, probably, to produce exactly the documentation necessary and groom his entire life to where we wouldn't have any suspicions whatsoever. And yet, they didn't. They did the opposite. We have to ask ourselves why. And I have to believe that it is so that we will all be very distracted. Like I said, it's really ironic that we have Orly Tate's, the lawyer, dentist, real estate agent, who is getting somewhere in the court system with these cases against Obama and his citizenship issue. And then in the background, we have her husband working with Novartis, which is and other major chemical companies and pharmaceutical companies that are in the middle of about ready to pull the trigger on what is a very, very looming apocalyptic event.
Mm-hmm. Don, we're about out of time. Do you have a closing comment that you would like to make to those that are going to be faced with this decision? And I by no means imply that you are responsible for what decision they would make, but a lot of people
well,
are going to. What's Don Harkins going to say?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm blessed and honored to be working with a group of people right now who are attempting to put out a variety of materials to get people to see what's actually happening, and that material is being posted at a website that's being created specifically as a one-stop shop for this kind of material, and that is at pandemicfluonline.com. So pandemicfluonline.com, and I encourage people to go there. We are developing a community tool chest, a toolbox, so that there's flyers and other media available so that people can get out there, hand material out, talk to people, get educated on the subject matter, because I feel with about 100% certainty that the machine is in motion, that this is the main event. There's no more screwing around here, but I am not completely certain that they are going to succeed. And I believe that it's going to take a Herculean effort on people who already know to convince more people that there is a bigger plan afoot here. And if we can get enough people resisting, if we can put enough monkey wrenches in the works, if we can get it to where the administrators, the healthcare professionals and the public servants who are out there just doing their jobs, if we can get them to see what's happening, we have a chance of averting this thing. And if we do that, people can say one more time that, oh, Don, you didn't know what you were talking about. You're an alarmist. You thought the sky was falling, and it didn't. And maybe it never was going to happen, but I feel very strongly that we have to go forward as if it is. And in the end, we will all be stronger for it anyway.
Yeah, well, how's the old saying go? Better safe than sorry?
Yeah, there's what, ounces of prevention and pounds of cure and all that?
Mm-hmm. Well,
I don't think there's any cure if this gets out of hand like they want it to.
Well, I want you to know, Don, that your appearance as my guest on Evident Footprints tonight blew the sockets out of the wall. Our servers are maxed out around the world. Some stations got bumped off, but for those that are still hearing us, let others know that the archives of this show will be available in their entirety for you for future broadcasting. Know that that will take place. We're aware of the problems that are out there. So, Don, I want to thank you very much for being on Evident Footprints. We've got some work to do. Thank you for your assistance in my publication of this recent piece that I did. Again, for those on the Internet or radio, if you want to write this down, go to directlightproductions.com. Click on either articles, news, or the bottom lower left link on the breaking stories. Dr. Orley Tate's federal lawsuits exposed to the flu pandemic. Read that, and you'll understand what we talked about on tonight's show if you were a bit confused. Don, thank you so much. Say hello to Ingrid for us, and we're going to have you on in 2 weeks, so I look forward to that.
Well, I think this is a very fluid situation, and 2 weeks from now we'll have an awful lot more to tell you.
And should something come up all of a sudden, could you make yourself available for a surprise visit if necessary?
I'd be happy to. I really respect your listening audience, and if and particularly if they plan on responding to the threat and the challenge that we're facing right now, I would be honored to keep them abreast personally of what's happening. And again, I urge people to go to pandemicfluonline.com. We're building it. Some of the best, most dedicated, quote, anti-vaccinators in the country are working on it with us. We're putting as much information as we can, and we are attempting to get the balance of information necessary so that people can make the right decisions and have the tools to convince others that they really need to wake up and pay attention.
Okay. Don Harkins, thank you very much for being on tonight's show, and I wish you the best.
Well, thank you very much, Don, and tell Seth good night, and to your audience, we'll see you next time.
Okay. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest tonight, Don Harkins of the Idaho Observer. You can check out any of the articles of the Idaho Observer by going to Idaho-Observer.com. Also, you can subscribe. It's an annual subscription, comes out monthly, although August is the vacation, or I should say September now, is the vacation month. So they're not going to be publishing a paper in August, but they will begin publishing again in September. You can call them to subscribe at area code 208-255-2307. Again, that's area code 208-255-2307. And they are on West Coast times. Normal business hours are 9 to 5, like anywhere else. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound. You folks out there at Wind Talkers Radio Network, thanks for hanging in there with us. Also, blogtalkradio.com. And most of all, you, the listening audience throughout the world, and those of you in our military service. We salute you, and we wish you a night or day filled with peace, love, and light. And you folks in the United States, have a good night.